I would like to welcome today to Radio Gorgeous Kumud Gandhi. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous Kumud.
Hello. Nice to be here.
You are the author of A Cupboard Full of Spices, and you are referred to as the Spice Queen.
Yes, that was a title that was bestowed upon me from Nick Coffer at the BBC. So he kind of said, "You're the queen of spices. You know your spices, don't you?" So that's where that came from, and it's stuck ever since.
Okay, so you are you have the Saffron House, which is the catering arm of your spice empire, I'm going to call it.
Yes.
Yay! Okay, and also the Cooking Academy. So you've opened a cooking school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this book is sort of the culmination of that journey for you.
Yes, yes, it very much has been. And it's been a journey about 10 years in the making. So from the get-go, from the start, the Saffron House started as a result of my foray into understanding the science of food. And that's to say that originally I started off with an economics degree, working in banking. I loved that career, but I took a career break when I had my children. And it's when I was really looking at how I could make my own baby food and preserve it and just kind of, you know, be safe with it, that I started to look into food science. And I found the course of, you know, food science at the London Food Centre, and I was absolutely fascinated. So not understanding, not knowing that where my career would end up, I simply went into study food science and quickly found this world a very interesting understanding of food and the chemistry of food. And this was not something that was new to me, because my heritage is that my mum's side of the family are chemists, industrial chemists, and my father's side of the family are spice merchants. And so I've always grown up with this alchemy of food and understanding food from a chemical point of view, what we would call in India as the Ayurvedic understanding of food. And so we would essentially, and in my home and my family, we would look at the chemistry of food and find a solution if for your ailments.
So the more medicinal properties of food.
The more medicinal properties of food. So if, for example, I had a tummy upset, then I was more likely to be given a little bit of vinegar with some black pepper or some salt or something that would actually balance the stomach rather than go to the chemist or go to the pharmacies or the doctors and find a solution. If I had diarrhea, I'd likely be given mustard seeds to chew on, which were appalling, absolutely tasted vile, but, you know, a spoonful of medicine. That was always the approach to, you know, betterment, to better health.
It was through the kitchen.
Through the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so I've always understood food to be about the balancing. Not that I knew at the time, because when I'd ask my grandmother or my mother, why are you doing this? They wouldn't necessarily know, because they weren't necessarily the chemists, or, you know, and it was just something, well, my mother's always done this. Well, you know, it's very good for the tummy. But when I started to study this, I suddenly found the answers to those questions. And there were little, many, many light bulb moments going off, because then I kind of go, wow, now I understand. Mum, all these years you've been telling me this. Did you know this is why? And it was a revelation.
So not only for you was this sort of putting your busy mind at work, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. finding a passion through that, but also marrying family traditions, you know, and what people would call old wives' tales. But
yes,
this is sort of binding you more to your family and the traditions in your family and those stories, and putting that all together and feeding your family.
Absolutely. And now when people say, oh, that's an old wives' tale, and I go, well, where did that tale come from? And you develop that theory and you go, well, actually, you know, and there have been tests and studies and all kinds of things. Then when you look back at, the kind of medicines of today, so you have a cold, you have a sore throat, then, you know, I would say have some honey and have some lemon and have some ginger or some turmeric and the various reasons for doing that. And these have been proven methods to remedy cold and such symptoms. And of course, it's different if it's a virus, and then you would treat it differently if it's a virus. But what you're absolutely right that what started out as busying my mind, so I'd gone from a very, very busy career at the Bank of England, having, you know, 10 meetings by lunchtime, to being wrapped up in children, and suddenly there was something else that was now beginning to occupy my mind. And at the time, I had no idea where this would end or where it would take me.
What was it about preserving baby food that got you hooked? Because that's an important, to me, that seemed like an important stepping stone in your journey.
Yes, yes, it was. And that's really what led me to get onto the internet and do some research, because I was kind of terrified that I might be trying to where are the critical points that, you know, at what point do bacteria start to breed, because I don't want to think I'm doing good and then end up find that I'm actually poisoning my children. And I wanted to be safe, and I wanted to say, well, can I mix these two? What would happen chemically speaking? And I know that there is a chemical impact, because food is chemistry, and we are human biology, and food is chemistry, and together it creates a biochemical reaction, and we all have different reactions. And so all of this was fascinating to me, and I wanted to look into, well, why would I mix this, and would that be too much protein, and would that be, you know, and it was about balance, and, you know, and I probably sounded at the time a little bit anal, but I almost felt like I had a new project.
Yes, you were like one of those type A personality moms that were like, now that it's not banking, it's the kids and food. You know? But out of that, yes, you started catering.
Yes, and that was absolutely by chance that, when I had time to go to the gym, and I used to, so once the children were packed off to school, and I used to go to the gym, and there were people at the club that were, you know, just in busy lives, and one of them happened to be the head of security for Madonna, no less, and he said, do you know, Guy loves Indian food, you should come and cook for him, and he'd love it. And so, you know, and I thought he was joking, and I was not really serious, but he happened to be serious, and he'd obviously talked to Guy about this, and it happened. And and out of that spiraled one or two other things. And then he said, oh, do you know, I've got a client who does a lot of kosher catering, and they would like to meet up with you. I've told them all about you. And so that led to actually working with a kosher caterer. And
interesting.
And let me tell you, my world changed. I just kind of, I was thrown into the deep end of simply using my cooking skills to cater en masse. And my, gosh, my learning just shot through the roof, and I suddenly found myself in a place. And there were some really important people, that helped me in that journey, that enabled me. It was either going to be sink or swim. And a couple of people gave me a leg up, but also helped me to fathom out that world.
Yeah, because, I mean, on one hand, okay, so I can see from banking, economics, Bank of England in particular, you're thinking of economies of scale, you're thinking on general high-level principles, whereas cooking for a lot of people, it's physical.
Yes.
You have to produce.
Yes.
You have to then learn the other side of, yes, the theory.
Yes.
Is actually getting shit done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so I focused my skills, and actually, my friends used to laugh because I actually had a spreadsheet of tasks, and I broke down those tasks like a project manager.
That's the way to be, girl.
And, and I outsourced in the sense that I knew that all the mass stuff I didn't have to do. So all the chopping, cutting, prepping, the mise en place, I didn't have to do. So I would bring in people to do that. And then I would simply be involved in the spicing process. And if the recipe was followed, and if I had a few couple of trusted people that understood the principle of cooking the way I did, then I could replicate this on a much higher level. And then I could finish the plates. And then I brought in people that had the skills to make what was essentially absolutely pure and authentic Indian food, but plated in such a way that it looked magnificent, then I could master this high-end echelon of catering.
And when you say high-end echelon, I mean, we are talking, you catered for the likes of Gwyneth Paltrow, the Prince of Wales, and P. Diddy.
Yes.
And P. Diddy. So we're not talking like, you know, you're serious when you say.
Yes, yes, yes. And I was asked to cater for the launch of the world's most expensive suit.
Wow.
And of course, it had a foray of guests, A-line guests. And I quite, in my absolute ignorance, said to my colleague, I said, "It's dark in here. Why is he wearing his sunglasses?" And she rather kind of said, "That's P. Diddy."
And we're like, "Oh, okay.
Oh, okay."
All right. Exactly. But so, as the queen of spices, give us, I mean, you have been called the queen of spice. It is because that is the part that required your careful attention and expertise. We think of spice just as flavoring. What is spice?
Spices to me are a number of components that require balance. And they need time in order for their chemical values to come to the fore. And it is like an orchestra. And in the cookery school, I explain it like arranging music and playing music. And I think that spices are a whole range of different instruments, and it's very important what order you play them in and how you put them in and how long you cook them before you add the next level and before you move to the next stage. And when you balance things perfectly, you have a wonderful harmony, or you have a wonderful flavor. Mm-hmm. And too much of one thing can drown out the other sounds, and too much of one spice can hammer out the other flavors. And so in the same way, it's a very careful arrangement of spices. And the time that you take to do this spicing process absolutely is where the investment is. So you can think about increasing temperature, and that has an impact on flavor. You can think about trying to accelerate other processes by parboiling something beforehand. But when it comes to the spices, you must allow them to do what they need to do and cook in the way they should. And you can't accelerate that process.
And what exactly is a spice?
So a spice is a dried fruit or herb that is grown, and it could be the flowers of it, it could be the leaves from it, and it could be the dried fruit of the plant. So it could. So we generally tend to call herbs things that are the leaves, but the spice could be the actual plant itself that has invariably been picked and then dried.
And when we say, when we think about spicing and spice, we think it's merely flavoring. But in your book, you explain that that spice not only, that's sort of the third thing that it does.
Yes.
That prior to that, it has medicinal properties and preserving properties. And these have been used throughout history. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? give us a little flavor of that, if you will.
Yes. So when we didn't always come to understand that if we added cinnamon, it would bring a sweet but slightly warm flavor. It wasn't as accidental as that. The forefathers of the Greek philosophers, the Roman times, the Roman philosophers, knew and understood food greatly, as much as our Indian sages did understand food. And so food has been chemistry for thousands upon thousands of years. And it was Hippocrates that said, food is medicine and medicine is food. And so as far back as that, spices were being used in order, A, to preserve the life, the shelf life of food. So if you killed an animal, for example, you couldn't go and put it in the fridge. So you had to preserve it in some way. And so you had to marinate the meat, or salt it, which is where the old kind of the kosher preparation comes into. And you had to preserve this meat in some way or another. But also, if you had preserved it, you then needed to extract the preservation flavor. And so you needed to then add other spices to perhaps even mask the smell of rancidity, which we completely and utterly take for granted. But today we have so many different ways of preserving food that we can't even think of an era where it was necessary to do this. But really the convention of using sauces, that's really where that came about. You were trying to cover up a piece of meat and, not so that you couldn't see that it was not really as great as it might have been.
Today we value aged meat.
Absolutely.
Yes, but it's preserved aged meat.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Hung in a fridge.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. And so we have changed the modern way in which we eat. But when we think back to a time pre-electricity, we were the mother of invention, and we looked at ways in which we survived, and didn't we survive? Didn't we just make so good? And it was Mother Nature and the Earth that gave us all of these plants, and it was for us to discover what their values and their properties were. And we did, in the fullness of time. And we have forgotten this over a period of time. And all these old wives' tales would have been passed down from one generation to the other. And the advent of, our history, the way in which the family has changed, the way in which we no longer have generations living in the same family that would have passed down. I'm not necessarily saying from one woman to another, but it would have been passed down the generations. But that doesn't happen anymore. And I too live in a family where, my children's meals are prepared and they will come down and they won't necessarily understand why. I mean, I still use those remedies. So my children are aware and, they study, they have all the normal pressures of life. And so they don't necessarily cook all the time as much as perhaps I might have.
And so you grew up quite differently. You grew up, your parents came here from India in the 1950s.
Yes.
And one thing I was very interested to read and want you to tell us a bit more about is that you bought a year's worth of rice in advance.
Yes.
Yeah, tell me a bit about that.
It's a tradition. It happens in India. There's a certain time of year that you buy in your vegetables, your pulses, your lentils, your rices, and they came in great Hessian sacks. And of course, rice is something that you ate every day. And so we had sacks of rice, two or three sacks of rice. I can't even imagine. They were kind of, today they would be my waist height, and but I was quite young then, so they were perhaps even my shoulder height at that time. And it was just the smell. I can still smell that Hessian. I can still smell the rice. And today when I'm touching rice which is old and I can smell it, I it just takes me right back, and I can see the room where it was stored and just emptying and shaking the drum so that you could settle more into it and compact it down and filling it, and then using the sax as a kind of, you know, for our recreation. That was, you know, my childhood. It was just fun.
I would say, and in that one generation, and there's a wonderful picture in the book of you sitting almost like the as proud can be next to an aga. You know, so that I love that that you really are, you know, on one hand, representing ancient traditions.
Yes.
And then and Indian traditions, but then have brought everything in and the modernity of the ancientness and modernity of English life as well, and that your children are surrounded by all of that.
Yes, and it is. It's an eclectic mix of everything. And one day they're doing Indian, and the next day they're immersed in their normal iPhones and iPads and, you know, everything that modernity has to offer. And yet they know their way round a spice tin. They know why we eat with our hands. They enjoy that culture too. And they embrace all of that.
All right. Well, so that we can embrace all of this, tell me about the structure of the book. Because with spicing so important, and I think it's great that this has evolved out of your, you know, your own cooking, then teaching.
Yes.
And so now you can get to sort of bringing that more broadly to people through this book. So tell me how it's constructed, and will I be scared? Will I be competent at the end of it?
The idea is to not make you scared, and the idea is to give you all of the resources. And the conversation in the book is in the same way that I have taught, and it sounds, and my people that have bought the book have come to the classes, and my friends have said, Kamut, this book sounds like you're just talking. And it's the way you talk, it's the way you explain things. And so actually, immediately it's designed to put you at ease, and it's designed to be structured in a way that starts from the beginning. There is an understanding, there is a compendium of spices which talks about, first of all, what their characters are. So what can you expect from some cinnamon? What flavours will it give? How will that manifest itself in the cooking process? What is it going to do for you medicinally? So why would you want to put it into the recipe? And then nutritionally, what's it going to do? So medicinally, it is an anti-inflammatory, but nutritionally speaking, it's going to be high in zinc or magnesium or copper and all of those things. And at the and just even taking that one spice, you could then look to the back of the book where there is a table which says cinnamon, and then it tells you exactly what its nutrient composition is. Or you can look at it the other way and say, if I'm told that I am low in magnesium, what should I eat? And then you can just literally follow magnesium, and it tells you all of the spices you should eat, or all of the foods you should eat, all of the kind of, you know, everyday vegetables or whatever. So that is important to me, to make it very simple and non-jargon, because I think that's, you know, everyone, every day there's a new story about you should eat this and you should eat this and this is good for you. But how do you make it happen? We all know that this is good, but how do I make this happen? How do I make it part of my everyday repertoire? And so the recipes in the book are designed to enable you to be able to very quickly see that if I need to eat this for my particular biochemistry needs, then this is what these are the recipes I can make. And it's going to make you feel good, which is what it's all about.
Fantastic. So give us some idea of some of the recipes, time involved, spicing, your methods.
Yeah, I wanted to make, and again I say in the in our cookery classes that curry, Indian food, has a perception of taking a long time. And I say to people that, you know, you could have a very basic curry in 25 minutes flat, okay? And if you just break down the steps very simply, if you know your spices and you know your kind of processes, and getting organized is most important. So if you have a cupboard full of spices, which is where the title of the book comes from, if you have a cupboard full of spices and they're just, you know, in the little tiny jars, and it's quite difficult to make sense of everything, and you start the cooking process, and some people are very mechanical. They'll have everything out of the cupboards, they'll line them all up, they'll weigh them all out, and so on. Other people will wait until they need the spice, and then they'll go to the cupboard, by which time the onions are burning, and by which time it's all beginning to go wrong and what have you. So the book actually begins by telling you, organize yourself. Get yourself one of these spice tins, organize your whole spices and your ground spices, and then go on and you know, enjoy this journey. But most of all, be forgiving. If it doesn't go right the first time, it's only food. It's only one meal in your entire life, which is, you know, one millionth. So put things into perspective, but just cook with some joy, and just, you know, for me, every time I cook, whether I'm feeding my children or whether I'm feeding a stranger, I cook like I'm feeding, I'm cooking for my brother or my sister, and so, and for my family, because that's how I see food. And so the recipes are simple.
Not a competitive family then, because for me that wouldn't work. Cooking has comeuppance.
Well, you can be competitive with it, because I think people will kind of taste your food and go, "Ooh, I want to cook like this." And and people have bought the book. So Catherine, who works for me, her mum has bought the book, and she doesn't usually cook Indian food. And I've slightly digressed from your question, but this is a very interesting point, because she has become competitive overnight. And so she doesn't usually cook Indian food. That's not her foray. Indian food was always brought in food, takeaway, or go to a restaurant and eat. And her mum has now started to work her way through the book, and she's entertaining, and she's seeing excellent results. And so she's getting a lot of accolade, and she's so delighted, and it's kind of just opened up this whole new thing for her. So it's that is really lovely. And people say, you know, I love making your food, because it's just really honest, and it's so much better. You've almost spoiled the experience. I can no longer go to an Indian restaurant, because I know how to do it properly. So, and in such less time, and I can batch cook, and I can freeze it, and it freezes so well, and all of those things.
Fantastic. I'm very excited. I'm going to get stuck in, because I do cook like that. Like, I do like to get organized and put things together beforehand, because as you say, then I can enjoy the cooking process. Yes. And take the time over the spicing.
Yes.
I will tell you how I get on.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. Good luck. And everyone, get a cupboard full of spices.
Yes, for their family too.